Well, good morning. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces episode 115. Can't believe today is Friday. This week, this month, this whole year is just flying by. But I am your host, Coleman, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. As a reminder, we do have that chat box open on the bottom right-hand corner of your screen. So if you want to just say hello, ask a question, definitely go ahead and feel free to use that chat box. And up at the top of your screen, if you could go ahead and retweet this link so we can get some more people and get this space some more listeners, it would be much appreciated. But on today's show, we're just going to kind of recap the week, go over some of the current events that are going on. I kind of dig into a little bit about what Doge is doing with the U.S. aid program and all the corruption that it is exposing. So we do have Yomer and Bob up here on stage. I know Shane's going to be trying joining us here in a couple minutes, but good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good morning, Coleman. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, it's another great day to be alive. I'm excited for today's conversation. Hopefully you can bring Shane up. It's going to be, I think, an interesting episode.
Yeah, the crazy thing about this is we all kind of knew this was happening, right? We all knew that there was a lot of corruption, but when it was just, when it's made public like this and you can actually see the depths it was going, it still kind of takes me back. It's just kind of like, wow, they really are doing this. It's unbelievable. I definitely want to, we can go ahead and start on this and just kind of get everybody's thoughts on what's going on. I'm sure even if you are living underneath a rock, you've heard some way, shape or form of the corruption that, this program is finding, and the left is just having a really hard time, coming to terms with this. And I think I'll throw it up in the nest, but the best meme I've seen about it is the one from The Office, where he says those trying to stop the probe into the corruption or fraud are the ones that are doing it. And I think that sums this up pretty well. But Yomer, Bob, I just go ahead and run with it, wherever you guys want to start with.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I'll just make a short comment here and interested to hear it, Yomer, but, that it's interesting, like I've heard it put that, you know, if you have someone who's stealing from you, you would usually want to go after the thief, not the person who is exposing who the thief was. And so I find it interesting that the narrative that they're trying to control is that, Elon Musk and his band of, robber barons who are stealing all our information, are out there wreaking havoc in the system, when really what they're doing is pointing out that there is thieves in the den. And so I think that's, a peculiar tactic, but maybe it's the best one that they have right now because all of these things are coming to light.
Yeah, they're just trying to scream and make different accusations just to see what kind of is going to stick more or less. And then they're going to try and just go down with that narrative and see if they can try and slow it down. But you're right, Bob. Like, again, it doesn't matter if you think that whether or not they have the legal rights to be going into this and finding what they're finding. The fact is that they are finding a lot of corruption, and that should be kind of the main focus and point of be like, okay, maybe let's just, even if it's just like, hey, let's pause it right now and let's just investigate this one area. Like I would be fine with that right now and then just allow everybody to come together. But it's just, it's so bad. And it just shows that how evil these people are, and we're realizing really quick at how their net worth is in the tens to millions of dollars. It's because of all these backdoor payments.
Yeah. And I saw the lady from USAID or USAID, come out. I don't know if anybody else saw her little monologue about the whole situation, but, you know, they estimate that her net worth is only between 100,000 and 1 million, and that people weren't, doing this for money, but you see all of the, you know, all of the people around them. And so I wonder also just in light of having Canada, I don't know if you guys saw that, but Canada pulled off all their aid, like their public database that was talking about all their, you know, places they're sending money to. I think that's peculiar timing.
Like, it's not the people necessarily that work for USAID that are making the money off of it, right? It's just a mechanism for corruption, right? Like your run-of-the-mill, like CIA agent isn't making millions of dollars, but they're funneling millions of dollars to some puppet. You know, there was the guy from Venezuela, I think we were funneling a bunch of money to, you know? It's like, you know, as they dismantle USAID, like, you know, you can have a little bit of sympathy for the people there that thought they were doing some good stuff, because, you know, they just bought into the lies and shit. But, you know, it's just a mechanism for the CIA to do these color revolutions and stuff. And it has been for a long time. Back in 2012, Russia started banning any foreign funded NGOs specifically for this reason, because they got tired of it and they didn't want to play the game anymore. So it's been known, like it hasn't, it's like an open secret that's been known that we use that to, you know, push these narratives and push these corrupting influences into countries and stuff like that. Back then with Russia, I think one of the big ones was like the, LGBT stuff that we were pushing through these organizations was like one of the triggers that they claimed or they used as to push it out and, you know, to make it illegal in Russia. And, you know, that's why it's surprising that more countries haven't kicked them out, I guess, because of just pure corruption. They want the money. Russia is in, you know, they're a resource rich nation that doesn't really need like the money. Like Putin can get, his billions or trillions from his own country. He doesn't need it from America. So it gives him the ability to force USAID out. You know, like when I lived there for a little bit, and you know, when I asked like the Russians there, they said, yeah, he's corrupt, he's a dictator, but you know, he's good for Russia. And I think that kind of you know, that's kind of true, you know. That's my impression.
Putin.
Yeah. So my point just being that like you know, if you don't have like your own natural resources to kind of plunder, you'll take them from someone else, you know. Whereas he can just take from his own country and be wealthy. He doesn't need America, you know, throwing our influence around in his country. Whereas like, you know, if you're in a third world country, like you probably can't, right? Like it's a lot harder to become super rich off of your developing or failing nation. So they'll take those US dollars because it's the easy route, right? It's a lot harder to build your own country up enough to be able to plunder like a little bit of a percentage off to the side and actually become rich. It's easier if somebody just gives you a bunch of money and, you know, whatever happens to your country, it happens to your country.
Well said, Omar. I just wanted to welcome Shane and Infra to the stage. Good morning, gentlemen. Let's hear your thoughts on this.
Morning, guys. Yeah, I hope we get deep into this morning. This is going to make a lot of people sick, and there's a lot to get into. There's a ton of overlap between what you said is funding and how it's funded and who's all linked in a lot of this and what they're funding. I think this is more the bottom line is, you know, when you find out, you know, exactly what this really looks like in a bigger picture and the depravity and the horrors of it, I think most Americans are still going to be shocked at the gravity of the situation that we have on our hands. We can kind of get into the details later, but this revolves around global sex trafficking of children. And we've been saying it for a long time. You know, we know they're into it. We know that they're doing it. They're running, you know, drugs, they're running kids, they're running, you know, circles and war and everything else. And it's all the same people doing the same things. And now there are literally smoking guns now and a trail, you know, miles and miles and miles long that have cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of children their lives. And that's just, you know, the bare minimum. So I'm looking forward to getting into this, and there is a lot of great material that's out there too from guys like Ryan Mata. If you guys haven't seen Trafficked, I highly, highly recommend it. It's a bit hard to watch, but I think anybody who's ever paid taxes needs to do it. And I think there's something that we need to start talking about in terms of the tax revolt. I think I've paid, I'm not filing taxes this year. So in terms of, you know, filing income taxes, I'm done. Until they get this shit figured out, there's gotta be a line in the sand somewhere, and now's the time to draw it.
I like that. I want to just say a caveat. We're not giving financial advice to anybody. I agree with Shane. I'm going to have a serious conversation with my wife. And again, the amount of corruption that's going on is just, it's unbelievable. But I think I posted up in the Nest. I don't know if it's just the X algorithm or what, but I am just seeing a lot of people who I wouldn't see them taking this stance as saying what Shane just said is that they're having a hard consideration and not paying taxes this year. And people are calling for just a pause at the very least, until we get this stuff situated. But I want to circle back to something you said, Shane, and you're talking about the sex trafficking and the smuggling of children and using them for trade. Do you think that DOGE is trying to, find the funding for that, and then they're trying to tie that back to the Epstein list? Because I've heard Elon say that he knows that there is a sex trade, and I wouldn't put it past him to try and find the money first before he brings everything public.
You know, I'm fairly torn on exactly what Elon's goal is here. You know, over and over, you just see the different people who have been associated with Epstein in the past, and it's everybody. I mean, you look at the highest levels, there's pictures of, you know, Elon, Trump, the Clintons, obviously, they've all been close to the Jeffrey Epsteins and Ghislaine Maxwell's. Like they're literally recorded. I mean, everybody who at any point had any big role in politics has been in this. And this is what I don't understand. I don't understand, you know, exposing, you know, USAID, or USAID here and going this route, because this could, you know, I don't know, you know, if maybe if he doesn't have anything to be exposed, then great. Or if there's something, you know, in the interim that's going to be a giant, you know, black flag event to interrupt all of this, like aliens, you know, like they're going to try to sell that. I don't really understand, because if they really get down to the, you know, the meat and potatoes of this, I think it's already spelled out. And I think, you know, like I said, I think Ryan Mata, makes a pretty good point. Ian Carroll has done a pretty good job in exposing some other sides of this that all overlap. And I think that's kind of what I'm going to tie together for you guys this morning, is that this is going to take down damn near everybody. This, I mean, between if they can get the Epstein list out there, if they can get the, you know, the Oprahs, the Diddy's, the, you know, the Epstein list, like this is so huge and so, you know, so damning that if there's not retribution and there's not justice, the whole thing's over. Like the you talk about extreme balkanization, like we're about to see it. And I think you're going to see more and more people standing up saying, I'm done paying taxes. Like this cannot happen. And I cannot be part of this. And, you know, if that means you're going to kind of come and try to take stuff by force, well, I guess that's where we're at.
Sorry.
I see this all as I was writing an article about it, and then I had to write an article specifically about Gaza because there's so much retardedness about the plan that I had to address that specifically. But I see a lot of what's going on as just the realization and the implementation of a reset from a global hegemonic power to a regional one, right? So you have to look at what we're doing with USAID. USAID, we know, we were just talking about how it's like a CIA front used to, you know, enact these color revolutions to peddle our influence all over the world. So dismantling it is dismantling like that apparatus, both like the foreign aspect of it and the domestic aspect of it. And then you look at like what we're doing, right? Like, and I lead the article, I have like the draft up, but I lead the article with this. Like there was that saying, you know, we don't retreat, we attack in a different direction, right? So if you look at what Trump is doing, you know, he's throwing all these political grenades out there that is, you know, that's what I view like his like calls for like his so-called plan in Gaza. He's basically trying to get people, I think, pissed off enough to where they'll throw up their hands and say like, you're too stupid. Like, we'll fix it. And then he'll just come back and focus on what I think he really wants to focus on, which is our near shore, priority. So that's Panama, I think, is a big one. Canada, I don't really think there's much with the Canada thing. I think it's just like a negotiating to get better, like rights and stuff like that, and just to assert dominance basically. And then, Greenland, I don't know. Maybe Greenland, he actually wants Greenland for their resources and stuff because it doesn't make sense for Denmark to have it. But it's also serving to throw a political grenade in the relationship with NATO, which I think is I've argued in the past, it's a great tool for negotiating, with Russia for peace. You know, right now I just saw like something about like NATO talking about putting troops in Greenland to counter like Trump's, like push for a takeover there. And, you know, he's trying to get peace with, Russia. If he just said, hey, we'll withdraw from NATO if you stop the fighting in Ukraine and just accept the borders as they are. You know, that to me, I see is like where all this is coming from. I think it's just resetting everything to where we aren't involved and entangled throughout the world, and we can focus on what's actually important to the United States, which is the United States. That's like the, maybe rose colored glasses. That's where I hope this is going. And like some, like, a lot of the things when you look at them together, it kind of paints that picture. Like I said, if I can pull myself away from Civ 7 today, to finish writing that article, I will, and I'll publish it out, for you guys to read. But that's kind of my thought process on it, right now.
Infra, do you have anything you'd like to add to this, sir?
No, I'm happy to see it. And I think it's very telling that, you know, the kind of mainstream uniparty globalist group is having a meltdown over spending cuts. They never had a meltdown over spending my tax dollars on useless stuff. You know, once every American can eat for free, then we can start worrying about sending money overseas so that other people can eat for free. But yeah, it's good to see. We need a lot more of this.
Absolutely. I do want to welcome Yellow to the space. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, guys. What's up? Yeah, I don't know who said it, but like I think someone said that Americans want to put in Greenland bases to, or Denmark to put NATO bases to combat like the American already there. I really don't think things are going to get that complicated. And I don't think that what Trump is doing in general by saying one thing and asking another thing is like too complicated to figure out. I don't think American is going to leave ever the NATO hegemony. Like, in the end, it's in their favor to be on NATO. That's my view. Whatever Trump is doing, as I see it from the outside, is like, he's playing the card of like, oh, I'm the wild guy. I'm the bad guy coming in to make a deal. So basically he's like playing the wild guy until he brings everybody in the table and then ask what he really wants. So what's happening with Greenland, what I see is he's saying something like so preposterous, like I'm going to buy Greenland, but basically wants him, the Denmarks to go to the table with him and maybe get like a bunch of like bases, gets the okay, better conditions for him to get some bases around Greenland so he can actually practically control that area for the defense of the United States of America, right? Which makes sense because new paths are being formed around there, and new money and opportunities are being formed around oil and gas. So he wants to capture that. And the thing he's doing about Panama, like, whatever he's saying is, again, I'm seeing him like, let's get to the table again and let's get the Chinese control out of Panama. Like, in the end, I think that's what he wants. Now, so I don't see something so doomsday scenario happening of like America getting out of NATO or all that. What he wants in the end is like maybe Europeans finally stepping up a little bit in the budget area, and Germany and bigger like countries in NATO finally contributing more, which is kind of justified, to be honest. So, yeah, that's my input as a non-American.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. You know, like my take on NATO is the ideal situation, right? Like, I don't really think the United States benefits from being in NATO, so I would hope that he's trying to get out of it. The mid-level take is, you know, exactly what you're saying. Like, he's negotiating for, I think he, like, that's kind of like the stick in, his book there, you know, come with some absurd position so that when they negotiate, like, they're off balance and at a disadvantage is kind of like the play that he goes with. So, you know, I think that it's not improbable that it could be like one of the things that he's going for. I just hope that we are getting out of NATO, because I really don't see the benefit to the United States of being in NATO. The imbalance in terms of defense expenditures, it's just so skewed that like to fix it is insane. And, you know, it goes against the principles of our country to have these unending entangling alliances. And it, like, if it's not Israel that buys all of our politicians, the next one will be the UK again. You know, that's when Washington warned us, he was warning us about people loyal to the UK. And, you know, that, you know, it's just now we have those people betraying us for Israel. I don't want them in the position to betray us for anybody. Nobody should be a favored nation except for the United States of America. And, you know, that's what I want us to return to. So I hope that's the route he's going. If he is just trying to negotiate some stuff, I mean, it's better than what we have right now, but it's not really being America first, right? It's just doing a little bit more for America, but still leaving us out there, because the next guy can just, you know, go right back to the status quo and, you know, sabotage us. So we really just need like a reset, and we need to acknowledge the fact that we are not the global power anymore. You know, the combat off of Yemen, right? A country that doesn't have a navy. Our carrier groups described it as like the most intense combat they've seen since World War II. And, you know, that wasn't them firing hypersonic missiles at our carriers either. You know, they have the Palestine 2 missile that's hitting Tel Aviv. They didn't point that at our carriers. Iran didn't point their weapons at our carriers. Iran, the difference between the first Israeli strike where they hit the S-300 sites and then the second strike into Iran, when after Iran got S-400s, that second strike did nothing. Like, it set a bush on fire. That's a real power shift, real dynamic shift. The fact that Iran's getting Gen 4 and Gen 5 fighters now from Russia because we so blundered the relationship with Russia. You know, there's a lot of things going on that do not play well for our global power. And that's not even getting into like the manufacturing and supply issues that we have. Like, our munition supplies are drastically depleted, and it's going to take decades for us to rebuild it. And that's if we stop the fighting now. So, and if China doesn't get frisky. So we really have to draw back, to save the country, we have to sacrifice the empire is basically, the point there that I have. And again, you might be right. Like, it is a drastic change, what I'm suggesting. So he might go for the less drastic one, which is just kind of some bold negotiating or whatever to try to get some better deals that still screw us over in the end.
I think, if you're in favor of, the Monroe Doctrine and you want to get back to that, like, you have to, push more and wish more for Trump to, reconstruct the strategic relationship of your country, the United States of America, with Israel, and reconstructure more that than the relationship he has with NATO. Because I don't feel like the relationship you guys have with NATO is as much of a lose-lose situation as much as it is with Israel, to be honest.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like the relationship with Israel is just a leech, you know, sucking the life.
Like NATO the NATO relations can be fixed pretty much easily. Like you're basically talking about like getting back to the table with Germans, the UK, and a bunch of like smaller countries like mine, Greece, and Turkey, like, and figure out a way to, okay, guys, like, pick up the budget a little bit more, and that's it. And now it's like a win-win basically for everyone, I feel. Like, but that relationship is fixed then. It's like a win-win for everybody. I understand where he's coming from, saying like, but also it's like also, let's not be hypocritical, like NATO is like also a way for you guys to push the weapons, right? Like whoever is in NATO has basically American weapons. So it's basically like, okay, in the end, okay, you can't get to 3%. Okay, buy some tanks from me. Buy some airplanes from me. Like it's like a perfect way to push American weapons. So again, it's a win for you guys, right? The relationship with Israel is like more complicated and it needs like 100 spaces or like this.
Yeah, the problem with that is like, and that's kind of like the talking point that they use that like, you know, oh, well, yeah, they're our allies. So they buy our stuff and it benefits our economy. The problem is like that the practicality of these weapon systems is becoming questionable, right? Like the United States Marine Corps dropped the tank. And we saw how like the Merkava performed in Gaza, right? Like it was, part of it was because they were too scared to get out of the tanks and provide the proper, combined arms, like employ proper combined arms tactics. But, you know, those tanks were like sitting ducks, right? Like they would pop out of the tunnels, fire RPGs. I mean, people were literally walking up to them and dropping bombs on them because of the fact that they relied solely on technology and they were too scared to get out of the tanks. Which like, I love it because, you know, fuck Israel, but as an infantryman, it just drives me absolutely insane every time I watch those videos and there's no infantry in sight. The point I'm trying to make is like the defense industry isn't actually, in my mind, prioritizing defense. It's prioritizing profits. That's why we're still building carriers. That's why we're still focused on like tank production and stuff like that. I think the reality of the future is, and I wrote this in my article, American Victory. We have to shift away from these exquisite platforms and that require these massive lead behind forces to maintain like the aircraft and stuff like that. And we have to shift to, I mean, In the strategic competition, I think that we see now that, missile and drones have the advantage. And I think that we should shift our production to that. And we can still supply our allies with that stuff. But we don't have to be there, right? If Hezbollah can launch, rockets into Tel Aviv off of a sandbag, then I'm pretty sure Germany can figure out how to do a good job with the missiles that we sell them.
But do you agree though that like, even though, a weapon that you guys are being produced, let's say tanks now, might not have that effect now in like modern warfare or whatever. It's so practical, but whoever country is buying it from NATO, is a kind of like pawn in the strategic map that is relationship and balances between, countries combating each other in a kind of like Cold War situation because that, what I'm saying, like, as an example, like, we bought like a bunch of like, we're buying a bunch of like F-35s from the States. Immediately the Turkey bureaucrats are like, oh, the Greeks are buying 35 airplanes. Like, we have to up it somewhere or how combat it somewhere. So there's like, even like whatever you guys are pushing might be not that practical as a weapon. It is being used as a way to check and balances and kind of control through the bureaucratic process that is in its country, right? Like it is a kind of web controlling somehow, right? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the countries we see that most effectively used with is like Egypt, right? Like they buy all of our fighters and stuff. And from my understanding, exactly. they need they need like periodic like software updates. Otherwise they basically brick the aircrafts. So that keeps them in line, a lot more than, like Greece, I don't think is really going to break from us, but like Egypt and, you know, maybe Saudi Arabia and stuff, they might be thinking about it. Right. So I think that is really like the ploy is to like, okay, you can have these weapons, but only if you do what we want. But I think that game is kind of going to come to an end, you know, like that's what I was saying, like with the missile, with the proliferation of like cheap missiles and drones. I think like the advantage of our more exquisite platforms is really diminishing. And like the cost of sovereignty to these nations is going to become harder and harder for them to bear internally. So that's why I say, like, I think it's going to shift. And in terms of the relationship with NATO, I think we could still be allies, right? But we don't need this, like, hey, if you provoke Russia enough that they fight you, that we automatically go to war. It's not a win for the United States, right? The United States is not really at risk if Russia invades Poland. You know, like, if we decide we are, fine, go to Congress, declare war, and, you know, follow the Constitution. You know, like, this automatic tripwire for war is absurd. We should have, like, a North Atlantic treaty organization that is for trade. Sure, we can negotiate that, but it should be periodic. It should be last every 4 to 8 years or something like that, to align with the president and allow them to renegotiate. I don't agree with any unending alliance, right? It's a trap for future generations, and it shouldn't be allowed. So I mean, there are advantages, but I just don't think that they outweigh the costs to us. And again, I think the proliferation of our technology, the return that these other nations are seeing from it, I think is going to diminish, especially after we saw what happened, in the recent conflict in the Middle East, the way that Yemen, was able to, withstand the force of our Navy and be able to strike into Tel Aviv. I think that's a really resounding signal to, the other actors in the area. Cause don't forget Yemen is an incredibly poor country. And the fact that they were able to do that is, I mean, honestly astonishing to me. I did not think that when we floated a couple carrier groups over there, they were going to be able to continue striking into Tel Aviv. But they did. And, you know, that's not something that I think the region is, going to forget about.
Really quick. I want to give, No, you're good, Bitcoin. Just 1 second. I just want to say a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use our code BTCVETS for 5% off. Pay with Bitcoin and get an additional 10% off. So 15% off your order, solosatoshi.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Go check them out at punchplate.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training, paladintowertactics.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. This is a family-friendly conference in Juneau, Alaska. This is going to be amazing. I say this every weekday, but guys and girls, get your tickets. This conference is going to sell out quick. Go to bitcoinalaska.org, get your tickets and your lodging. Again, you are not going to want to miss this show. So sorry for talking over you, Bitcoin for presidents, but I want to welcome to the stage. Also, we had Texas Toast join us. Good morning, gentlemen. But Bitcoin, go for it.
Thank you. I was just going to comment on all that EMR was saying. Have you ever thought that maybe they were letting those things come in a little bit to rubbleize that whole area so they could build it back up? I mean, the powers that be, not the soldiers, but the people, you know, cause at this point you got to question a lot of things with how much corruption's all over the place. Just a thought, not that I have any intel whatsoever.
Are you afraid to like the missiles coming into Tel Aviv? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know. There's always like the 1984, dynamic, right? Like, there was the war is meant to be continuous, right? So like they always allowed the rockets to come in and always hit the poor neighborhoods and stuff like that. I think that's exactly what happened with that Druze community. I think that, you know, Israel launched not a Patriot, the, Iron Dome missile at them and, you know, blamed it on Hezbollah. I think that's what happened up there. But in terms of like actually letting stuff like come into Tel Aviv, I don't know. That's usually like a line for them that they want their, population to, and you know, some of the articles I touch on this, they want them to be like blissfully unaware of what reality is around them. They want people to believe, they want, you know, Jews around the world to believe that Israel is the only safe place for them. So I don't know if they'd be like willing to let, missiles into, to strike.
Tonight. Right on. Right on. Do you think they leveled Gaza in a way that just gives them the, you know, the ability to go in and invest crazy amounts of money and build it up, kind of like war is a racket type thing?
I think that they leveled Gaza because they were trying to commit a genocide and kill everybody that was there.
That's Richard Grove's theory. You ever hear of Richard Grove? He's been on that, beat for a long time and it makes a lot of sense. Forensic historian.
I'm not familiar with his stuff specifically, but I think that's what their goal was. And I think, I'll post the article I wrote. I just published it yesterday, but I wrote a bit on what I think of the goings on, shared to the space here. I think that Israel tried to force everybody out of Gaza, but they failed. We talked a little bit about like their failure to implement tactics. You know, their armies on the ground is conscripts, right? They have incredible air power, and their spy networks are probably unmatched even by our own. But they still rely on, you know, 18-year-old conscripts that are like a staff sergeant in their military, which is absurd. To implement the things on the ground, which they can't do, right? And their failure is exemplified by, you know, Hamas having parades in the street after the ceasefire. What they're trying to do now is to, you know, Trump saying, oh, no troops in the ground this time. But you know, it's all a ploy. If he does get Americans over there, I'm sure something conveniently bad will happen and then we'll have to send troops on the ground. And then, you know, there we are in another forever war for Israel. And the end result will be the same as the other ones. We will lose, Americans will die, and the world will be worse off for it. So I posted to Nest like an article I wrote about it, like what I think the ploy is here and what I think should be done. In short, like I think the plan is so bad that I don't think Trump is serious about it. I think he's trying to get oversized commitments from the local Arab states to rebuild. And again, I think this, because again, when I look at the full picture, I see all the other stuff he's doing looks like a withdrawal to like regional focus. And you know, us owning and rebuilding Gaza is the exact opposite of that. So it doesn't really fit into the what I see the rest of the plan is. So I think it's just talking points to, so like, everybody in the world is calling him an idiot right now and saying, you can't do that. That's ethnic cleansing. So I feel like it's just so that he can eventually throw his hands up and say, okay, well, fine, you fix it. And then walk away with, you know, commitments of billions of dollars from different nations around the world. I think that's the plan and the goal there. We'll see how it plays out.
All right. And thanks.
Hey, thanks for coming up here, Bitcoin for Presidents. I really appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime. If anybody wants to come up here and ask a question, you're more than welcome. Just really only have one rule. Well, I guess two, respect everybody. But no shit coining. Anything else goes. And then we do have a chat box on the bottom right hand corner. So if you, have a little stage fright, feel free to just type your question in there. I've been checking it periodically and I'll go ahead and ask your question that you may have. Infra, I see you have your hand up. Let's hear it, sir.
Yeah, I just had kind of a general question for you guys. With all the like drone, the drone technology, and we're seeing that, at least the videos I see on Twitter, it seems like that's one of the primary methods in the Ukraine war. You know, in a world where, say, China has 20,000 armed drones, what does defending that actually look like? Is there, I don't understand anything about on the military side or technology side, but is that kind of thing even defensible?
Like the POV drones and stuff like that? Is that?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think everything, there's always that like chess moves, right? Like there, when there was IEDs, we had things that jammed cell phone signals, right? So I imagine like we will develop technology kind of like the backpacks we used to carry, that would jam, drone signals. And then the other side will be working to circumvent that and use like wavelengths or methods that don't utilize that. So, you know, it's going to be this constant chess match back and forth in terms of survivability. I think that puts more focus on infantry and away from things like tanks, right? A tank is a giant target. There was, I think in America's Waning Power, I wrote about it, but there was some study that they were talking about, like the power of tanks used to be that you could race ahead and take ground. But because of the proliferation of, you know, this technology, they can't stay in the target theater. They can't stay still there. They have to withdraw back to a safe zone because if they're out extended, they're just vulnerable to these missiles and drones. So it kind of really hampers and really takes away from like the primary strategic advantage we have from them. You know, inside cities and stuff, we have the combined arm tactics that I mentioned, which is like, you know, you have, the infantry patrolling alongside of a tank. And then if you get engaged, you know, if it's a building, the tank can turn on the building, fire on the building. And the infantry's there to make sure that people aren't walking up to your tank and dropping bombs on it. But you know, it's from a human perspective, it's costly. You know, if you look at our COIN doctrine and our training manuals and stuff, it specifically says like, you know, you're basically out there and your troops are, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically you're putting the lives of your troops at risk to help ensure that you don't kill civilians so that you can kind of win the COIN war. Which is, you know, not something, obviously Israel is not interested in that. And I don't think the American people want to do it for no reason, right? Which is anything we do in the Middle East, I think is for no reason.
Good question, Impra. Oh, go ahead, Shane. I didn't mean to talk over you.
You're all good. I don't think China is spinning up a bunch of drones to invade the U.S. and you know, kind of put that to bed. I don't think, I will continue to say this. I don't think China and I don't think Russia want war with the United States. And I think they know better than these things. I think this is more of a defensive posture. And when you look at drones actually provide a fantastic net for things like ICBMs and hypersonics and things like that, especially, you know, huge drone masses. And something to start thinking about really, is, you know, the capability of the United States and maybe not even the United States, you know, these dark groups, that have black money, out there that we've talked about, you know, this week on the show with Ashton Forbes. I think I saw Greer talking about this the other day. When we start to understand what some of these groups actually have at their fingertips in terms of technology and where we're headed with that. We were talking on the show the other night about, you know, possibly using, you know, wormholes, which, you know, MH Flight 370, definitely looks like it went through a wormhole. And so if we've got these plasma worms that create these type of events with 0 point energy, you're talking about a completely different battlefront. You could literally move, you know, 100, 10,000, whatever, how many ever drones you think you might need to go cause chaos in a blip. And understanding that and where it comes from, I think that's, you know, one of the bigger pictures. This is, you know, we're moving into more like sixth generation warfare, and the old, you know, planes and, you know, manned vehicles and infantry and armor and artillery, it's just not going to be the same. Luckily for us, I think, you know, the world is moving into a Bitcoin standard, whether they're going to say they are out loud or not. You know, at the state level, these people are moving their chess pieces around, whether it's gold and silver or bonds, you name it. They're moving into a very fixed, finite supply type of money that is on a, you know, more of a meritocracy. And when you start to realize that, you know, war only begets, you know, death and destruction, and you have to rebuild from those things, the last thing you want to do is carry out death and destruction, because you have limited resources, and then what you should be putting those towards is life, liberty, and, you know, a lot of the things that we talk about in terms of the pursuit of happiness. So I'm not, you know, I know these drones seem extremely scary, and, you know, one-on-one, are you possibly going to be in a situation where you're fleeing from your life from a drone? Man, if this all goes sideways in the wrong way and AI takes over and there's something like Skynet, yeah, I mean, maybe there's something there, but I don't see this going that way. I don't think AI is quite as, scary as a lot of the sci-fi, movies in Hollywood would like you to think it is. I think it's more of just a tool. And I think as time goes on with, drones and AI and the rest of these things and algorithms, what you're going to see play out is information going towards the freest sources possible. And when it goes towards those open source, free content providers and things like that, that's where we get the best of humanity, not the worst.
Hey, so Shane, real quick, I had on the kind of missile defense point. I live on the West Coast in a major city, and so I always have the fear of especially with Ukraine and what was going on there, the escalating tensions. I always had the fear of an ICBM or something. And it's my understanding that they have each ICBM has multiple nukes. Multiple warheads within that one missile, and that they, all those multiple warheads kind of come down, they open up, high up in the sky, and then they're able to kind of come down in groups of 5, 6, 7, something like that. So would a drone, the drone net that you were talking about, would that be a good defense against that? Would that work?
Well, and here's the other thing. Yes, what you're talking about is like a cluster munition. Cluster munitions are terrible, especially if they're nuclear. But in reality, if a country is going to go to the point where they're going to go nuclear, the best thing that they could do is explode a nuclear bomb in the ionosphere, right? Like you're talking total bedlam for the entire, West Coast. You've got three grids. You've got the East Coast, you've got Texas, and you've got the West Coast. So if you wanted to actually go nuclear, the biggest return on investment without absolutely, nuking the planet is a high ionosphere type of nuke where you're going to destroy all electronics in probably in that quarter of the hemisphere, in those regions. So I don't really think, you need to be worried about ICBMs that have, multiple, clusters of nuclear bombs. This is really not likely. And even, the biggest sadists on Earth are not going to go that route.
Yeah. I think there was a test they did back in, I want to say the 60s or 70s. I think it was like Operation Starfish or something where they launched a nuke up into space and detonated and knocked out power in the West Coast there. Not to be a bit nihilistic, but if it did come to, cluster munition nukes dropping in the United States, it's basically game over for the whole world. So, make your peace with God and, don't spend time worrying about things that are so far beyond our control, that, advocate for peace and sanity, but know that once a cluster munition starts opening up above any nation, it's probably end game for the world.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes my fear and paranoia and kind of anxiety gets the best of me, but it was definitely something that I was kind of thinking more about. Given some of the threats, coming out of Russia. I just wanted to point out, like, gold, I know, we're all Bitcoiners, but gold, on the note that Shane was bringing up about kind of a move towards a more, honest, system, that does not, that disincentivizes war. Gold has been just absolutely ripping. Parabolic over the past month or so. What I've gathered, the GLD, which is the ETF that tracks gold, supposedly they have, kind of a one for one, backing with real gold. GLD, the lending rate at which, the shares are kind of lend out, to the market. That's increased like 200% in the past couple of days. People in England, which is one of the biggest physical markets, I think it's the second largest in the world, are requesting physical gold at rates that haven't been seen for over a decade. At first they were kind of, maybe a couple of weeks ago, it was, what used to take 2 days to get your physical gold delivery, now it's going to take a week, and then it was 2 weeks, and now I think it's up to as long as 2 months.
It sounds familiar, so, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I do hope, you know, because in that world, right, where the dollar is not the reserve currency and we do move to a more neutral, reserve asset like Bitcoin or gold, you know, essentially a country's economic prosperity, their currency is dependent on their imports versus their exports, their spending, you know, versus their revenue. And so, you know, it disincentivizes countries from going out and fighting wars. You know, your currency would get absolutely smoked because of the insane cost of war. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that the reason that the start of this fiat experiment, started with, you know, being unable to afford the Vietnam War. So I think, I think as much as we can advocate for peace and sanity, and the same goes for asset, you know, for a good money or not, you know, I mean, the dollar is just fundamentally broken. And I think advocating for those two things, you know, they go hand in hand.
So Infra, I'm glad you brought this up. I have a link up in the nest. Sorry, Bob, I'll let you go in just a second. But just so listeners who didn't understand, the borrowing fee went from 2.44% to 6.29% in less than a day. So it's a huge spike, like you said, 200%. So it's worth notice. Marty Bent put a nice post up there. If you're a gold bug, you know, I'll try and talk you out of it. Again, I understand hard assets and, you know, as long as you hold the physical, I get his point. But he makes a really good point about how this flood and the realization that people aren't going to be able to redeem for physical is going to put them all into Bitcoin. So it's a really good article up in the nest. It takes a couple minutes to read, but I highly recommend that.
Yeah, Coleman, just in case that went over some listeners' heads, basically, like if you own shares, and say the S&P 500, you have a couple hundred shares of SPY. You know, if you're a hedge fund and you want to short SPY, you need to get loaned the shares. When you sell short, you are selling shares that obviously you don't have. So you need to borrow them from someone else. You know, someone else, I could lend Coleman, you know, 100 shares so that he can go short. And then, you know, Coleman is hoping he can buy the shares back, you know, in a month at a lower price. And then boom, he makes, you know, that difference. So that fee, is what's gone up. The cost, the interest rate basically that I'm charging Coleman for the privilege of loaning him my shares. That's what that borrow fee is. And I would agree with Marty that, the verifiability, and non-rehypothecation that, you know, the on-chain, validation and everything about Bitcoin is just that I think that this issue with gold, these issues popping up, it just illustrate how much better Bitcoin is in pretty much every way.
Bob, everyone's been speaking over you. Do you want to go?
Well, I just thought maybe to round out the topic with the government corruption and something that Shane mentioned, maybe we could discuss a little bit just how we're finding out how all of these media companies who have such low viewership or listenership are still functioning, and it's because they've been funded through USAID and others. And so Shane, you kind of pulled on that or were talking about that related to all people will eventually move towards free sources of information that are open source and things like that. And so I wondered if people wanted to kind of touch on that as we get towards the end of the show.
Yeah, let's go ahead and let's touch on that. Shane, Yomar, I'll let you guys go. You're the panel experts here.
Well, Well, I think, you know, as we've seen, and this may be, you know, somewhat anecdotal, but also kind of backed up by the fact that, you know, X is the number one platform on the planet right now. Obviously it's had a head start and a correction. But as information and ideas begin to flow in places, that are not working, you know, and all evidence, you know, this past week's show again is when we had, I think it was like 150 viewers on YouTube. Right. I mean, for people who are going to create content and try to get ideas out to the world, that's a terrible return on investment to just post things to YouTube. Right. And so, we've obviously found other places, here on X, we had over 10,000. So you look at the, you know, discrepancy and we're talking about, you know, 1,000 times the impact. And then you've got, you know, emerging platforms that are out there like Nostr. And, you know, when we talk about free speech and owning your own, you know, your own publications, that is a huge thing. So, we've seen over and over and over that ideas and information want to be free and they want to go to the places, that are going to give them the highest return on investment. And that's just, I think that's, you know, that's a beautiful thing. And I think that's where I find a lot of hope, whether it's Bitcoin or whether it's Nostr, you know, this Bitcoin veteran space, which is completely decentralized, that I'd argue is having a very lopsided and, just a huge impact within not only the veteran community, but also within the Bitcoin community and you know, freedom tech in general. It's like we just continue to see this move that is enlightening people, and people, you know, in mass have started to, you know, have a higher vibration. I think this is a thing that I'll kind of wrap it up here is when we're looking at energies, right? One of the beautiful things about Bitcoin is there is so much high energy, right? And if you guys aren't familiar with this, you can go out there, and I forgot the doctor's name, that put together this table, but basically, you know, lower vibration versus higher vibration. This is actually quantifiable, in terms of human beings, where if you're in, you know, states of fear or shame or anger or any of those things, those are super low vibration. Whereas, you know, things like love and joy and peace and acceptance and consciousness are extremely high vibration. This crowd exemplifies, you know, is an example of extremely high vibration, and energy begets more energy. And when you're those people that are putting out amazing ideas that want to be free, that more and more people can gravitate towards, it gives people a hope. It gives people courage. And all of these things are contagious. And if you can lift these vibrations, I think, you know, a lot's to be said, you know, for, you know, the Christ followers, people who consider themselves Christians, and are working for a better world, you know, to, you know, lift up their neighbors, to lift up their family, to take care of themselves, not be a burden on society. This is what this platform, this is what a, you know, positive incentive structure through sound money delivers to everybody out there. And so, Bob, I hope that maybe, you know, goes a little bit further into, I think, where we're headed in eventualities. But, you know, this is also going to be one of those things that takes work. And I think that's, you know, the beautiful thing that the Bitcoin veterans bring to the table is there are few organizations, especially decentralized organizations, that are not only going to keep each other honest, but also going to work their tails off like a veteran community. Is if they see something and they're like a dog with a bone, they're just going to go after it as hard as they can. Some of it's autism, but a lot of it's just passion, and this passion to go out there and do, you know, good work with, you know, good people and surround yourself with good people. It comes through and you see it in spades. And that to me, I think is the future that we're aiming for. And I think it's the future we're building because it's where we're putting our energy, and the vibration is extremely high.
So Shane, in the short term, what do you see? I mean, with the CNNs and the, there's still the big corporate cabals that are spending with ads. So pull some government funding away from them, but they still exist. What do you see in the short term, or how do you think about that?
You know, it's one of those things is, if you guys have ever seen, to make the analogy to the Hunger Games, you know, it's like they just become less and less relevant. Nobody trusts them. Everybody is looking to alternative sources. I mean, when's the last time anybody, you know, trusted CNN? CNN was one of the first people to fall, or one of the first organizations to fall. People started calling the Communist News Network. I think it was way back in like 2007, 2008, right? And they haven't been really relevant since. Are they making millions? Yeah, but that's funny money, and that funny money is going to disappear, and they're going to ruin their names. If you look at, I think it was what, Trevor Noah, who just hosted some, you know, bullshit awards, you know, pat on the back crap out in Hollywood. He's like, this might be the last time you ever see me host an awards. Yeah, like, let's hope so, right? Because nobody watched that bullshit anyway, so. Yeah, they're going to be out there. Are they going to be futting around? Sure. They're going to be futting around with the people, the geriatrics that continue to watch these people, which are going to become less and less relevant as the, as time goes on. And I'm not so worried about them. There's not a lot that keeps me up at night. It's one of those things where I see it for the collapsing piece of the empire that it is, along with the military industrial complex, the Fed, big pharmaceuticals, big ag, all of these organizations that have been fed this, you know, counterfeit money for years and years and years that have worked against the interests of the people, and controlled the narrative. That's all absolutely crumbling in real time. And I think we all see it.
I wish we could chart like the time spent, watching Grammys against like the IQ of the people doing it. I'd really be interested to see that correlation there. No offense to any Grammy fans here. Just, I bet there's a relationship.
Hair dye as well. I'd like to see all the purple haired wildebeest out there that, you know, plug themselves into, you know, caring about, you know, what these professional actors think.
Did you guys see Kanye's wife or girlfriend show up? My wife was showing me, and I thought it was AI generated, and I vehemently disagreed that that was a real thing. Turns out I was wrong. For those who don't know, congratulations. You're missing out on nothing. But Kanye's wife or girlfriend, I don't know who it is, showed up to the Grammys, butt-ass naked. She dropped her coat and just displayed the goods for everyone to take pictures of. And then they were escorted out afterwards. So that tells you the state of society that we live in. We have, I'm sorry if I say your name wrong, Teo Towel up here on the stage. Good morning.
Hey, Coleman. Thank you very much. No, it's fine. It's Towel. But yeah, just a comment on that. Kanye West, whatever, right? It is really embarrassing. I don't know how people can live like that, right? It's like so embarrassing, disgusting actually, and just not considerate to other people that's also living on this earth. So really quickly, I want to ask you guys, do you guys have like a group on the West Coast? Bitcoin veterans, because I mean, you guys are scattered, but I don't know if you guys have been to a hangout or something on the West Coast, because if you guys do, I would be interested to meet up with you guys.
Hey, thank you so much thank you for coming up, and thank you for asking that question. We absolutely have groups all over the country. So if this is your first time in the space, or if you had forgotten, go to bitcoinveterans.org, go ahead and fill out that connect form, and we will get you set up in our signal groups. We have tons of groups, the original base, and then we have groups that are based on interest. So definitely reach out to us, and then we can put you in the right groups accordingly. And just to let you know, like, we're madman and madwoman on there. Every morning I wake up, there's hundreds of missed chats from all these different groups. So, yeah, there's a lot of signal. You ask a question, you'll get two dozen different responses. So highly encourage you to go ahead and reach out and join up for that. If you want to, meet some of the BVs, and you don't have to be a veteran to go ahead and join these. We do have some non-veteran groups, that you can take part in. Shane or Gabe, if you have anything you want to add.
I just looked over to my signal chat, and I have 118 messages that I haven't looked at in the BV mining one. So, that's probably like 2 hours of me not looking.
All Yeah, so definitely make sure to reach out. Sorry, Gabe, I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, man, you're good. Yeah, that mining chat is it's outrageous. That one is probably one of the most active that I've seen. And yeah, we've got a lot of guys over on the left side of the country that you can get plugged in with and engage. So yeah, hop on the website. We'll take care of the rest. But I wanted to kind of add to what Shane was talking about with the decentralization of information. We had an interesting conversation last night we were having a class, an online class with a bunch of veterans learning about Bitcoin, and we're talking about, what is money? Why do we need money? Who controls money? And we talked about, examples from history where money was controlled by the people and how we've moved away from that. And it's, obviously, in most cases, money is not controlled by people until, Bitcoin has come around, and that provides a solution for that problem, and it decentralizes control out of the hands of the state back into the hands of the people. And it's no different with information now as well. We're moving away from the time where there was a trusted source. Think back to Walter Cronkite. People turned on the news and that man gave information, and it was taken as absolute and total fact. And that is how people shaped their perception of the world and made life decisions based on that information. But we are not there anymore. There is no trusted centralized source of information. And I know right now for some of the more mainstream consumers of information, they're going to places like Fox News, and it may be seen as one of the more reputable ones. It is what it is. It's still directly connected to the state and receives funding and support from the state, and it just is what it is. And so that, I believe that is why we are seeing more of an emergence of people getting their information from one another on platforms like TikTok, which I think sucks, but it exists and it is a force and it's taking place. And it's really more of an example of peer-to-peer information sharing, as opposed to people getting their news from a quote trusted source. And I think that we can expect to see that pattern continue in more and more aspects of our lives. And I think that that's something that we should want to see continue, is the decentralization of information and then sharing it in more of a network style, which is happening. Now, it's great that it's happening, but there are also some risks that we should be aware of. In that when faulty information enters into a network and then it goes viral, it can greatly skew reality for a lot of people. And some important decisions can be made, by people in a very short time frame that can cause damage to them. So it's important for us to be sure that we are active, that we're active in the dissemination of this information and ensuring that it is accurate, and that it is relevant information that is good. This is one of the cool things about Nostr that I think that everybody should be exploring, is that it's uncensorable, or at least it's highly censorship resistant, and you essentially can go in and build your own algorithm in there. And so you get to identify what the accurate news or sources of information are. You can go in and you can choose who you choose to interact with. And you can determine what your information flow is going to be based on the quality and the value of that information that you're receiving. And you can also share and spread that information as well. So that's one tip that I would encourage everyone to go after, because I believe that TikTok is extremely dangerous from a security perspective on a number of different levels. And it's to the point where even given people recognize, it's clear that it's a security risk on a national level and I believe on an individual level, people are still willing to cast that aside just for the purpose of going in and being able to enjoy the peer-to-peer situation that it creates, which I think is dangerous and I think it's stupid. But people, that just shows that people are willing to embrace the concept of peer-to-peer information sharing to the point where they'll put themselves at risk knowingly and cast it aside. And so this is an opportunity for us to share with the world the opportunity, the options that they have to do this in more of a safe way that is verifiable, and that does not create that level of risk, or at least gives them the chance to mitigate that risk from an educated standpoint. So I just, yeah, anyway, like I said, I was, a lot of your comments, Shane, that you were sharing about that, it sparked that line of thought with me. And I think it's important for us as people that are focused on improving the world, people that are focused on improving the lives of those around us and of the larger communities around us. It's important that we share this information. It's one of those things that it's like Bitcoin. As soon as you started learning about it, you had to tell somebody, right? You've got to tell somebody because not only is it cool, not only is it exciting, but the impact that it can have and is having on the world is massive. And it doesn't just stop with Bitcoin. It continues on to information. And as we're going to see, it's going to permeate every other aspect of our lives. But that's all I've got.
I'm glad you said that, Gabe, because you're right. Once you start getting into Bitcoin, you don't just stop there. It affects every facet of your life, and you just start the veil on everything comes down, and it's really just a surreal moment. And that's probably why we're all so passionate about this, and we try and just talk about it 24/7. Is because we know what it'll unlock and its potential. We did have a listener question, that I want to go ahead and circle back to. It was at the beginning of the show. So again, anything that we say on this show is not financial advice. You need to do your own due diligence and you need to make decisions that are best for you and your situation. But someone asked if, about, one of us who alluded that we may not be, filing taxes this year. Again, no financial advice. Everyone needs to make their own decisions. The question was, though, unless you own a business, most wage earners do not have many options as filing taxes, as there is a way to claw back what the government took. So they're saying that if you don't file taxes, you won't get the money that you paid into it. There's a couple different ways to look at this. Yes, most people who don't file with a business, you just file as a family or an individual, you normally get a tax return back. And that's because you're paying in more and the government holds on to that. And then on the 15th, they go ahead and write you a check for whatever you overpaid. There is a way around that. You can definitely claim more dependents, and this way your paychecks are more. But at the end of the year, you most likely are going to owe taxes on the 15th. It really depends on your comfort level. Before I had my business, that's the way I like to do it. I really did not like paying the government extra money, and I was happy to go ahead and write a check at the end of the year when I had to pay taxes. This way I knew that they weren't able to take that money, and it was my subtle way of sticking it to the government. If you have the ability to, I always recommend to create your own business. There are so many tax advantages in doing this. You unlock a different level with everything. There's so many deductions that you can take. You pay less taxes. You can pay yourself directly from your business and not have to pay certain taxes. You're allowed to, like, corporate retreats. There are so many loopholes with this. The only thing is you can't have a negative earning business. Your business has to make money. So make sure that you can go ahead and start something. And that can be, you know, I want to go start mowing lawns on the weekend. I want a power wash. I want to create a consulting firm. You name it, you create it. But I always encourage you to go out there and create your own business for the tax purpose. Keep some of that money legally. Gentlemen, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'll just second that. You know, it's definitely an interesting thing to, you know, start your own business. And I'm not saying like quit your job and start your own business, you know, like you can do like a little side hustle thing. Even if it's just something that kind of is of interest to you, you know, I have an LLC that I write under, and it allows me to, I can write off the books and stuff. I have stacks and stacks of books that I read through, you know, to get material for the articles and stuff, and I can write those off now. I would have bought the books anyway and read them anyway, but now I can say like, well, I needed to buy it for my business that I'm running, and I can write those off. So it's, you know, it's not a ton, right? Like I'm not going to, be rich because of it. But you know, it's something I was doing anyway. And now I just have a little bit more of an advantage for doing it, because I spent a little bit of time and money to set up an LLC. It's really not that hard. There's companies that'll do it for you. There's like the legal zooms and the this and that. I think I use like, I don't know, something registered agent or something like that, that they set it up for me. I did set one up myself. For my previous company, the second time around, I just did not feel like doing all the paperwork myself. I was being lazy and just spent the money. So, there's different routes you can go. But it's definitely interesting. And like I said, you can do it to something that, you're basically doing anyway. And if you're like, I think you have to like legitimately show how you're trying to monetize, technically. So, you know, as long as you can show that, you can write stuff off. And again, I really think it's worth it.
Thank you for that, Yomar.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. I want to give that a third to that motion as well. There's become such a reliance on the large organizations to provide all of our services and our goods for us that I feel like there's been a drifting away from entrepreneurship that is required for a civilization to really move forward. And again, I mean, this goes right back to the conversation of decentralization of goods and services that are being provided. I think that every person should at least start up one business at some point in their lives. We should be doing that, especially as parents or anyone who has, you know, the next generation looking up to us, because it's something that we want our next generation to understand and to know that it's not scary. It's not daunting. Okay. You might start a business. It might do great. It might not do great, but there are lessons that are involved and it's not difficult to do if you're willing to learn. The information is out there. It is not hard to find. Just Google, I want to start a business, and you're going to get all kinds of resources that are out there. Or ask some of the people in this room right now, who obviously have done that very same thing. So, and another thing is, when you start up a business, find something that you can do with it that'll connect it to Bitcoin. Okay. I know a lot of people that are looking for jobs in the Bitcoin industry right now. And while the number of jobs is growing in that space, it's not enough to support the demand of the workforce that is trying to break into Bitcoin organizations. So look, if you can't find a job, then create one. Start your own business, create your own Bitcoin job, and then in turn create other Bitcoin jobs for other people. So this thing isn't gonna build itself. Okay. We've got to have people that have the builder's mindset, that are prepared to roll up their sleeves, dig in. And it's like you said, Eomar, you don't have to just quit your day job and jump right in with both feet and then find yourself, you know, living off of Top Ramen soup for the rest of your life. Do it smart. Okay. Start where you are. It doesn't take much. There's probably going to be a small filing fee. I know there will be in most places, and it's not something that is impossible to do. So you just got to take those first steps, reach out to people that have been there. And I know there are many people that are happy to share their experiences with you.
And to that point, there is a in the Signal chats, there is a entrepreneur and business chat, something, I forget exactly what it's saying, but something like that in the Signal chat. So if you sign up at bitcoinveterans.org, that group is there. So you can always ask questions and stuff in there.
Yeah. If you're willing to work hard for your boss, working 8 to 6 or 8 to 4, I can guarantee you you'll be happy to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and work till 7 o'clock at night if you're working for yourself and you see the potential. You don't have to share any of that hard work with anyone else. It's just you unlock something else. It's very empowering, and it gives you confidence. And like Gabe said, you're going to have all the cards stacked against you. But that's what makes us who we are, right? Is facing up to adversity and blowing through it. So again, reach out to us. We're more than happy to share any and all insight that we have.
And not to ring alarm bells, but you know, if we do, go through some big shifts in the monetary system and there's financial turmoil, your corporate job could lay you off. But if you're working for yourself, even if it's a side hustle right now, it might give you at least a tiny bit of a safety net as you, you know, try to find your next thing. So there's a lot of layers of advantage to it.
Absolutely. So we went a little bit longer today, but it was a fantastic conversation. Bob, Shane, Yomar, Gabe, Do you guys have anything you'd like to add before we start wrapping up? I'm going to take that as a no. So I do want to thank everybody who tuned in today, everybody who is commenting, asking questions. It really means a lot to us. And for everybody who retweeted the link, we had a lot of listeners in here today. So that was fantastic. We do this every weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. On Monday, we're going to have Lee Bratchert with the Texas Blockchain Council joining us. So that is going to be an amazing space. Thank you very much, Bob, for getting that one lined up. So you're not going to want to miss that. That's Monday morning at 10 a.m. If you missed Tuesday night's video pod, we had I forget his name.
Ashton Forbes.
Thank you, sir. He joined us. One of the highest viewed video pods that we've done. It's on Spotify. It's on Fountain. Sorry, guys. My brain is turning off. So go give it a listen. Grab your bone broth, put your walking shoes on, and go for a walk and listen to that. That's what I plan on doing as soon as we wrap up the space today. But that is all I have. Again, all the listeners who tuned in, all the speakers, Bob, Yomar, Yellow joining us, Infra, Texas Toast, Bitcoin for Presidents. I really appreciate that. And Gabe, thank you for joining us. It's the weekend, guys and girls. Go out there, talk about Bitcoin, spread the orange pill. Just don't shitcoin. It's like yelling into the void and expecting an echo.